Welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. We are a community in exile here because they're doing this phase one renovation project. But here we are off the north of the commons, and we are still reading 2 Corinthians. Excuse me, and we are in chapter 8 and verse 21. You ever notice how fundamentalists, when they quote the Bible, they say chapter 8 and verse 21? You ever notice that? So if you want to do like a fundamentalist expository thing, you have to talk that way. So the crowds are pouring in even as we speak. Hosanna to Greek Club, right? So 2 Corinthians 8, verse 21. And you remember that Paul is talking about the collection, and he's kind of describing, it's interesting, he's describing all the people whom he is sending to the Corinthians. Now, remarkably, he only names one of them, Titus. And he calls the other one, you know, the brother whose praise is well known and so forth and so on. But in verse 20, to get a head start, Paul says they wanted to avoid this, lest someone find fault in the matter of or with respect to this generosity which is being ministered by us, he says. So that gives us to verse 21. And Tom, here's a chair right over here. Verse 21 might sound, we'll just do that verse, something like this. Prana umengar kala umanan enopian kiriu ala kai enopian anthropon. That's not too bad. You just have to look up pro na'e'o, which means to have regard for something. You can almost guess it. No'e'o means to think, and pra means before. So to think in advance, to anticipate, to have regard for something. And Paul is explaining why he's sending all these people. For we are having regard for kala. This is just the neuter plural adjective, kalos, and it's the direct object for noble things. We're trying to do things well. Umana, not only, in the presence of the Lord, but also in the presence of men. So again, I think, of course, it's a good and godly and pious thing, but he's just saying, look, we're trying to do this well. We don't want anybody to think badly or think that we have false motives in the matter of the offering that's being taken up. So that's not too bad, right? Simple, straightforward sentence. And any comments or questions about verse 21? Okay, great. We'll just go right on to 22. Sin epempsamen de autois, tan adelfun hemon, han edokimasamen, en polois polakis spudion ante. Nunide pelu spudiateron pepoithese pole te en humas. Okay, starts out pretty good. And we sent, but again, this might be, Dr. Lessing, the dreaded epistolary aorist. I mean, you know, we at the time, anyway, it can be rendered, we are sending, see, because when they get it, it's in a past action, but it's actually happening for them. So the godly epistolary aorist, right? I publicly apologize to Dr. Lessing. So we are sending to them, or maybe with them, because we've got sum pempo, right? The brother of us, whom we tested and approved. Dokimazo means to examine, to test. It can also refer to what comes about at the end of a test, that is approval. This is the same verb as its most well-known usage probably is let a man examine himself in 1 Corinthians 11. That's dokimazo. Whom we approved. And now we have to decide what en polois and polakis go with. Literally, in many things, and polakis is an adverb that means often. And now we have a participle, unta. This is the participle of the linking verb. And it's masculine, well, it could be a number of things, but it's masculine singular accusative, and the referent is brother, right? So who is being eager, spoudaion? Answer, the brother, aforementioned in the line right above. So how do we take, it's a predicate position participle, and at least I think it makes sense to take it with a causal force. We are sending our brother, now kind of a parenthetical phrase, whom we approved. And some of the translations actually take in many things with the participle. You could actually go either way. You could take it with the main verb, or you could take it with the participle. If we take the participle causally, then it makes your cell phone ring. Because he was eager, right? And not just eager in many ways and in many things, but now let's add a thought to that. But now, that's a really loud cell phone. That probably showed up on the internet. Nunide, but now, Paulu is... neuter singular accusative of pullus, much or many, and it's probably adverbial. It's just a neuter singular accusative adjective in many ways or muchly or something like that. And then we have another comparative, spoudiatron. We've seen a couple of these in this paragraph. More eager, more earnest, right? So you sort of hook that in with the participle that preceded. So we sent our brother to you because he was eager, but now muchly being more eager. The thought is something like that. And what would cause him to be more eager? Well, it might be a dative of cause, which is the next noun. Pepoithesis means confidence, and this is the dative singular. And pole, much, modifies confidence, and then the article is repeated, and the prepositional phrase, ace humas, modifies confidence. And it makes tolerable sense to take that with a causal force, which, as you may remember, is one of the things that a dative noun or pronoun can do adverbially. So why is this brother muchly even more eager? Answer, because of the much confidence which he has toward you. So what Paul is describing here is, look, we're sending really good guys to take up this collection ahead of our arrival, and they really care about you, and they think really well of you. Right? So that's kind of the force of verse 22. And he's not done. It's very interesting how much time and energy Paul spends here describing the, I suppose you could maybe call them the scouts or the emissaries that he's sending ahead of himself. He's going to spend some more time. Remember, he's on the road, probably in Macedonia, and he's going to get to Corinth himself and receive the offering, but he's going to send these people ahead of time in order to make sure that the offering, you know, moves forward in a good way. And he's going to continue. We're going to spend another paragraph or two on this topic. So, hey, a Java Update client checker has encountered a problem and needs to close. Java Update client checker is shorthand for Beelzebul.
Is that verse 23?
I think so. But before moving on to verse 23, I thought I would ask about verse 22. This is actually tough sledding. This takes me a while to figure this out because I don't know what it's supposed to say in advance. This is not like John 3:16, you know. So, questions about, comments about verse 22, anything? Okay, again, pars or die, right? 23. Eta hyperititu koinonasemas kai eis humas synergas. Eta adolfoi hemon apostoloi ecclesion doxa Christu. Literally, if on behalf of or about Titus, And the translations and the commentaries all gloss this as, if you have any questions about Titus. That's how they gloss it. Now we have a nominative, supply the linking verb. He is my partner, my koinonos, right? And he's also another nominative, synergos. He is a co-worker unto you, probably here in the sense of for you, right? Would you like to have a verb? I'm sorry, we don't need one. Now, it's interesting to me that Paul doesn't repeat himself and say, eta hyper adelphone. You know, he said, now, about Titus. So it's eta, you might expect a parallel construction, but he doesn't do it. These are simply nominatives now. So if about Titus, he is, supply that, my partner, or, you know, compadre or something, and a co-worker for you. If the brothers of us, supply, they are, interestingly, apostles of the churches, remarkably, the glory of Christ. I don't know of another way to take that than just in apposition. So, and you know, what Paul is suggesting, of course, is this is how the Corinthians are to regard these people. Titus is a koinonos and a synergos, and these other brothers who are being sent along, they are, and here's an interesting example, probably a lower level meaning or a broader sense of the word apostolos, that is simply one who's sent, right? They're sent by the churches, especially in Macedonia, who are going to, that's going to come up explicitly in chapter 9 in just a minute. They are, in fact, the glory of Christ. That's interesting. And but this is Greek Club, so we won't do theology. We just do grammar. Questions, comments about verse 23? I think we should have I think phase two should be a freestanding Greek Club building. Don't you think so? With like a snack bar and maybe a, you know, some power bars or something, don't you think? Discounted running shoes, Reed, you think? So, yeah. Okay, good. All right, 24. Tainun endexen tes agapes humon kai hemon kauchesaos hyper humon esautus endek numenoi es prosopon ton ekklesion. Excuse me. Now we have a new sentence here, therefore, right? And we don't have a verb. All we have is a participle, say. And we had, we sort of had a similar problem, grammatical inconsistency at verse 20, although that one is a little more easily resolved. But here there's sort of no, there's no verb, and so the commentaries that I checked, at least that bothered to comment on this, simply call this an anakaluthon, which is a fancy word for a grammatical mistake, right? See? Now, you could try fixing it. Endeknomi means to show, right? But we have the related noun at the beginning. So is this showing the showing of your love, right? Should we understand something at the beginning like, I urge or I command the showing of your love as you show, so the participle then would be dependent on an implied main verb, see? It's just a real grammatical awkwardness. I mean, the general force of what Paul is saying is clear enough. He wants the Corinthians to demonstrate an endexen, a showing, and here would be pretty clearly an objective genitive, the showing of love. Which love? The love of you. That would be a subjective genitive. And show the showing of a boasting. Who's boasting? Our boasting, which is about you. See, Paul has been telling, he's like he has a dual parish. right? He has a parish in Macedonia and has a parish in Corinth. And he's been telling the Macedonians what great people the Corinthians are. He's been boasting about them. And so he wants them to show that his boast was correct, right? Toward them, and the them is the Macedonians, the brothers who are going to accompany this letter. And I want you to show it unto or for the face of the churches. It's very interesting, and Dr. Kloa has done a lot more work, especially in 1 Corinthians. But Paul, in no other place in his letters does Paul make as many explicit appeals to the ecumenical context. That is, he says it's to the Corinthians that he says, for instance, about at the end of that interesting head-covering passage, he says, if anyone thinks that he's going to be contentious about this, we don't have any other custom, nor do the churches of God. See? And so the Corinthians are kind of like, forgive me, Americans, right? They're just doing their own thing. Now they're doing it in an ancient way, and Paul is calling them back. And, wait a minute, it's not a surprise that all that stuff about the body and members of the body. I mean, when you think about it, the specific context in Corinth so powerfully gives rise to the way Paul actually communicates. See, why are these the people to whom he writes, we resolve to know nothing among you except Christ and him crucified? Answer, because they're huge theologians of glory. That's why. I mean, it's really interesting. The more you think about it, it's sort of all, it all fits together in that regard. So he does appeal to the other churches, and he wants them to realize that they are connected also to them. And there's a grammatical glitch here in verse 24. So you call it an anakaluthen, which makes you sound smart, and then you move on. Questions about comments about verse 24? Yes, Will.
Could you just take it as a periphrastic instruction with the supply verb, the ame verb?
Yeah, like an imperative.
Like, say, translate like the demonstration of your love and our boast about you unto them is being demonstrated before the churches.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you could. That would be one way to do it. Is to understand a form of the linking verb, and then the participle becomes periphrastic.
So I was actually a lot smoother that way.
Yeah, I actually looked this up because when he says therefore, I'm expecting some sort of an imperative. Therefore, do this. And I actually looked it up. Paul never used in the Gospels actually twice in Luke and once in Mark. There's actually a periphrasis of the imperative of the linking verb for the participle. The most famous one is in Matthew 5, where Jesus says, be reconciled to your enemy while you're on your way to the court, you know, when he's talking about when you're angry with your brother. That's actually a periphrastic imperative. There's only three of them in the New Testament, none of them in Paul. And so I didn't know, I mean, we're just kind of guessing at this point. But yes, that is a possibility to just supply the linking verb, and then the participle becomes part of that periphrasis. So. That was a really good Greek student that went by.
Come back.
Did he say anything? He didn't hear me. Okay, yeah. Well, historians don't hear very well. So, okay, good. Anything else? We're done with chapter 8. I mean, that's a milestone. Anybody mean cupcakes? All right. Well, then let's go on. We'll maybe do another verse or two. We're in chapter 9. We're almost done. Sort of. Let's get verses 1 and 2, I guess. Perimen gar tes diakonias tes eis tus hageus perasanmoesten ta graphein humin. Oida gar tain... we'll stop there. We'll stop there. So, now, 4, on the one hand, concerning the ministry, peri takes the genitive, and it means about or concerning. With the accusative, you might remember that peri means around. So peri plus the accusative means around, like walking around the tower. And with the genitive, it means about or concerning. For concerning the ministry, the unto the saints one, right? There's a prepositional phrase in attributive repeat position. Now go to the very end, and you'll get the subject of is. To write, the act of writing to you is to me parison. This means abundant. And I couldn't figure this out until I used the lexicon. And it's kind of an idiom. It means to be superfluous. And I think it's been a number of days since I actually got to say the word superfluous. So I feel good about that. Or unnecessary. See, now he's saying, look, I don't really have to do this. I don't have to write this way about you. But here's a good example of how the articular infinitive, ta graphein, it's a present infinitive. So should we say to keep on writing to you or to indeed write to you? I'm never quite sure of what particular force to give to a present stem verb form. But it's simply the subject of is. And then verse 2 is a gar clause, and he'll explain why that's the case. Good. Anything on verse 1? Pretty short, not too bad. Once you figure out what parason means here in this context. Okay, verse 2. Oidegar tain prothymion humon, hain hyper humon kaukomai makadazin. Hati akaya par eskioastai apa peruse kai ta humon zelos erethizan tus pleonas. Now, to be honest, if you're a normal person, you're going to look at this and you're going to go, I have no idea what he's talking about. It's time to study Hebrew or something like that. But it's not too bad. And that was by the not a put down, by the way. Yeah, that's right. Okay. You guys are both younger than I am. So I was jogging in the park yesterday, and most of the time dogs just ignore me. But this little tiny dog on a leash kind of went at me. And I said to the owner, I think he figured out that he could catch me without too much trouble. Voida is just our friend. I know. It's a perfect informed present tense meaning. For I know the readiness of you. Right, we've had prothymia about 80 times in here, which, or as we would say in English, about which, kaukomai, I boast. This is from kaukaomai, and remember that you only see the uncontracted present stem form in the dictionary, right? So this is just a present indicative, middle deponent, first person singular. About which I boast for you or about you, makedazin. This is the dative plural of Makedon, which is, not surprisingly, a Macedonian. Right? So, for I know your readiness, about which, concerning you, I am boasting to the Macedonians. Right? Namely, hati obviously is often because maybe here it's that. Achaia, that reminds me of crosstown rivalry talk, you know. Well, the Storm Lake, what was the Storm Lake mascot, Tom? The Indian?
Tornadoes.
The Tornadoes. Well, Storm Lake is ready to do it. How about who was close to Storm Lake? Like a rival town. Nothing was close to Storm Lake. Okay, yeah. Well, you get the, yeah, so we've got Macedonia and Achaia. For Achaia, this is from paraskeoadzo, which means to prepare, and it's a perfect indicative middle or passive third singular. For Achaia has been prepared apa peruzin. We've seen peruzin before. It means a year ago, last year. For Achaia has been prepared from last year, and the of you zeal. This is, I had to look this one up. This is from erethidzo. It means to provoke or arouse, normally in a negative, sort of angry sense. But here Paul means it in a positive sense. For your zeal provoked or stimulated the majority. Tus pleonas. This is the comparative of polus. It's very irregular, and you only know it by sight if you teach Greek on a regular basis. So So Pastor Armbrust, he knew it, but he's been teaching Greek lately. So we're going to stop there at the end of verse 2. We're in the middle of, again, Paul is working. He's apostolically working the crowd. That doesn't sound bad, does it? He's appealing to them, and he's trying to get them in the right frame of mind to work on this collection, which is a very important thing. So, okay? Great. Thank you very much.